Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A grain, all right.
Just want to tip the scale. Just remember that,
then. There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game. Listen, and now they'll be roaring. And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk cow declare for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined by the former Cork footballer, Tony Davis, and by the sports editor of the Irish Examiner, Tony Lean.
So, good morning.
We're recording this on Thursday morning, just minutes after the announcement of the All-Star team. Kerry got 7, Galway got 5, Derry got 2, Dublin got 1. Tony Lean, outraging Kerry that they didn't get the full 15.
Well, I think Fitzmaurice has written a piece this morning for us, and I think he probably nails it. He's saying it's maybe one of the least controversial All-Star selections in recent times, with one or two dishonorable exceptions. The main one, obviously, look, I mean, I think the main one is Tom O'Sullivan, Dingle's Tom O'Sullivan, who I certainly would regard to be one of the premier footballers probably all round in the country at the moment. And that doesn't get you an All-Star. I get that. The fact that Shane Walsh played as well as he did in the All-Ireland final has probably cost Tom an All-Star. You know, if you remember Tony as well, I think it was Carlo Manni actually did quite well in him in the Munster final as well. So, you know, is he unlucky? I think he is. Do I understand it? I probably do understand how, like, Liam Silk absolutely deserves an All-Star. Like, let's actually stay
and,
back.
And Chrissy McKay.
And Chrissy McKay, 100%. So he is unlucky.
But you can be unlucky, Tony, if you're a forward and you're up against the likes of, let's say, go up there now, you have David Clifford and Shane Walsh. Say you're a corner forward, right? I don't care how good you are. You could be nearly as good as Ronaldo or Messi, and you're up against David and Shane. Like, you're going to be unlucky. What's the young lad? Rian O'Neill from Armagh.
Yeah, you know, that was the other one I was coming. I think there's two surprises for me, Paul. Three, I suppose, if you include individuals. One is Tom O'Sullivan, but I get that one. You know, I'm not, contrary to what you might like to believe, Mr. Rose, we're not incandescent with rage about that one. I would imagine there's quite a few eyebrows in Armagh.
I think justifiably.
I mean, they probably were involved in the game of the year, were incredibly unlucky not to actually progress all the way. And Rian O'Neill probably is the primary subject matter of that ire, I would imagine. He's an outstanding footballer. I mean, no more than Sean O'Shea kicking the free in the semi-final. He kicked the free to bring the Galway game to extra time. So I would say they're the main two talking points. I saw somebody last night kind of suggesting that Shane Ryan was a bit lucky to get an All-Star. I don't think he was. I mean, it's goalkeeping nowadays is fortunately or unfortunately, whatever way you want to look at it, is about far more than just actually shot stopping. It's all about restarts, it's all about possession, it's all about turnovers. And he has a very good defence in front of him. And I'm right in saying, Paul, haven't I, you're the stats man, that he only conceded one goal this year. Was it one goal in championship and three in the entire season?
What a goal it was as well. Cormac Costello's goal.
Exactly. So I certainly couldn't have any quibble with Shane Ryan. And in the full form. Yeah, I mean, you know, I suppose Tony,
you could make a case for Ethan Rafferty. You could make a case for Armas.
I could. But what I would say about Ethan Rafferty, yes, Maureen O'Neill more so. But Tony Davis, where, I mean, do you just have to juggle around the forwards? Where would Maureen O'Neill go? Is Damien Comer maybe the subject there? Should it have been Maureen O'Neill instead of Damien?
You could suggest that. I suppose, overall, looking at it and going back down through the years, there was a kind of a regional or a geographic spread for All-Stars, all right? Mm. And, like, you have a whole lot of people in a room that kind of, they don't, I won't say they look after their own. No, some people are above all that insofar as, like, the likes of David Clifford and Shane Walsh. And I would throw in Sean Shea, all right? So, for me, in any team, they'd walk in the door of it, right? And for the rest of them, it's up in the air, as you could make any academic argument to bring any of the rest of them into it. But there is no geographical spread in this. I would say the guys up north are going apoplectic this morning because they don't have representation on it. Chrissy McCaig, yeah, you could, like,
Chrissy McCaig and Conor Glass from Derry.
Yeah,
Derry.
Like, again, you couldn't argue. Two outstanding athletes. Like, Chrissy McCaig is the go-to player for Derry. He's marked all the best players. And the Ulster Championship really is the only championship that's worthwhile. The other championships are
mediocre at best.
Even that, Paul, I would say. You know, the Ulster Championship is a mini series unto itself. I'm sure if we were in America, they'd probably have a name for it, you know, but it's a mini series unto itself that's worthwhile. Similarly with Conor Glass, they're just terrific. But no Tyrone, you know, Donegal, there's some really good players there. Some really, really good.
I don't know, Tony. I give me someone from Tyrone or Donegal who deserves an All-Star.
No, I agree with you. It was a poor year for them. But traditionally, Tony, when you go down to pick All-Stars, it nearly is on a regional basis. All right? Yeah. And like even down through the years, Connacht were thrown on All-Star every now and again back in our day. And sometimes they didn't deserve it. Do you know what I mean? But they had to get their All-Star. You know?
I would think if you look at that forward line,
God, it's brilliant.
That actually is, and I mean, you can argue.
I think Kieran Kilkenny, who I look, who's a great fella and a really good footballer. Kieran Kilkenny is the one.
Yeah.
Who is probably much. I would pick Rean. I'll say it straight out. I'd pick Rean O'Neill ahead of
Kieran. And I'd probably go with you, actually, Paul.
You'd pick Rean O'Neill instead of who?
Kieran Kilkenny.
Would you?
Yeah, I would. On the strength of the year, I saw Kieran play this year in the O'Byrne Cup. I saw him play in the National Football League and I saw him play in the Championship. And he had an outstanding finish to the year in the second half against Kerry. But apart from that, I did not think it was a great year for him. And I would pick Rean O'Neill there. I thought Rean O'Neill's delivery from the very first league game in Dublin against Dublin Croke Park through to the... And he had quiet games, but true to that last day against Galway, where he pulled that game into extra time. I thought he was outstanding.
Yeah,
he did.
Funny
in a way, Paul. Sorry, Tony. In a way, I kind of feel disrespectful to Kieran Kilkenny.
I agree. Yeah,
discussing and in a way, all these players we're talking about the best of the best. And sometimes, even when I was on the Sunday game all those years, you kind of feel amateur players and, you know, they're the best of the best. And like we talk about players' rights in England and people owning them and all that kind of stuff and everybody dissecting them. But they are so good. Like Kieran Kilkenny, oh my God. And I heard people talking about Fenton during the week. Fenton to me has been, you know, the most consistent and brilliant footballer for the last 10 years, you know. And in a way, without being disrespectful to Kieran Kilkenny or any of them, they're just the top of the top, you know, the really best players we have.
Just to back that up, I remember shortly after the All-Ireland, Paul, I did a chat with Jack O'Connor down in Killorgan one afternoon. And if you remember, Jack had actually sought out Kieran Kilkenny after the semi-final. Yeah. And it was kind of going, you know, what we're saying to him, what did you want that about? And I remember him saying to me at the time, like, he says, I just wanted to shake his hand. He says, I would put him, he says, on a par with Spillane and any of the great, great wing forwards that the GAA has ever had. That's how highly he would place him. Now, I know, says you, does that mean he gets an All-Star this year? But as Tony says there, you're talking about, you're talking about one of the best, and you actually almost would feel a little bit, you know, about kind of knocking him out of the All-Star team. I know what you're saying. I think if there's a place for Rian O'Neill to be found, Damien Comer, Kieran Kilkenny. Damien Comer didn't have a good final, no more than Tom Sullivan had a good final, Paul. So
Rian O'Neill could
go to 14 too.
I agree. I thought Damien Comer was instrumental in Galway getting there, and the hard, cold truth is he didn't do it on the big day. So that's hard. It's hard to say that because he was unreal for Galway in the semi-final, in Connacht, everything. He was unreal at the key moments in matches, not just when the game was going well.
Yeah, you're right. But he's a force of nature, Paul.
He is a force. Can I ask a question, Tony? When the All-Stars were being given out when you were playing, did it cause you angst when you didn't get one?
I suppose it did sometimes. Like, everybody says the All-Ireland is the thing, and it is, absolutely. But it's nice on a personal level to get an All-Star. Now, back in our day, if you were sent off in any game during the year, you weren't eligible for an All-Star. So bloody hell, there were some really good players not eligible for All-Star.
Including yourself.
Many years, because if you think back in those years, Cork were competitive. So we were playing in club championship here against Castlehaven and against other teams. And they were pretty colourful games, to say the very least, right? And to get through two, if not three, of those games a year without getting sent off would have been an absolute miracle. You know, you were playing on the edge. You were playing to win. And nothing else mattered other than playing that game. All-Stars only mattered around Christmas when it came up. So you never thought of an All-Star until the nominations came out and said, Jesus, who didn't get one? Who got one? How in the name of Christ did they get one? Usher, they're from there, they're bound together, whatever, the conversation would start. But it was important then on the night when people got them and you didn't get one or something like that. But you were ineligible because you were sent off. And that's it. But it is nice. It's nice to have an All-Star
Did it ever become a matter of division within a team
that you were in?
Was it ever spoken about?
Not at all. Paul, I think it is a personal thing. Yes, it was spoken about. If you didn't get one and other lads got one, you'd get slagged off. You know, it would be more dressing room banter. You're fucking useless. You have no All-Star. You know, bit of a slagging, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, but in a serious way, no. But it's still nice to have it, if you know what I mean. I have one All-Star. I got an All-Star in 89. And it's inside. When I became 40, Caroline, my wife, pulled together all my medals. They were in a sock down in Skibbereen under my parents' bed. And put them in a cabinet. And the funny thing about it is, where I'm from, Paul, there's very little hurling. We played a small bit of hurling growing up. And I have one county hurling medal under 16, and Caroline's from Cork. She's from Douglas here, right? So she put all my medals out on the thing. And in the middle of the whole thing, right in the middle, she has the under 16 hurling medal, all right? And it's a kind of a thump to me, really, guys, because I'm always giving out about hurling in Cork, because obviously Cork football is the not even a second cousin of an outlaw.
let's talk about this for a second, because the Cork senior football final is on this weekend. Nemo Rangers against St Finbar have shared the last five between them. Bar's defending champions, and in comparison to the Cork hurling final, what is the status of the senior football final in Cork?
And also ran to a point to those people involved in Cork football or the Cork football diaspora, it's huge. It's something I never miss. No, I never actually miss a Cork hurling final as well, Paul. I would go to the hurling finals. It's probably the only hurling game I'd go to all year is the Cork hurling final. I would go to that. But the Cork football final to us, that is Cork football people, I'd never miss it either. I would. I don't think I've ever missed a Cork football final. But on the wider scale of things here in Cork, it's well down the line. It will be important on Sunday, but it's well down the line, really, Paul. Football in Cork is always struggles. I'm from West Cork. I'm here now in Cork City. I'm in Douglas, and where I'm from is about 65 miles away, and it might be. In a way, it's like when I came to Cork City when I was 19 years old, I was coming into a different environment completely. So where I'm from, it's all football. In fact, Tony, I'm not sure how you think about this, but West Cork, Beara, and Duhallow are more like South Kerry in tradition, in sport, music, than Cork City. And East Cork, if you understand what I mean. It's like a divide of cultures in a way. Yeah. Like Cork hurling up in Cork City and East Cork is number one, absolutely. And there is no doubt about that. Whereas in West Cork, it's 90% Gaelic football.
Yeah, I would think the, and this is a debate we could spend about 4 hours on, but I would think like the kind of the all-encompassing Paul Cork County final would usually, I'm talking football, would be, if you could pick it from an audience point of view and you were the county secretary down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh and you wanted to fill Páirc Uí Chaoimh, you'd probably have a city side against a West Cork side.
Yeah.
That would probably be, you know, I have to say, though, in national terms, even, you know, outside Cork, I would certainly think that the likes of the Bars versus Nemo would have a certain luster to it, Paul. You know, you're talking about teams. Nemo have won more All-Ireland club titles than any other club in the country. The Bars have also, I think the Bars have two, have they two All-Ireland clubs? Have they?
I think they have four.
Tony, I'm
five,
not sure.
Four or five. Five.
Oh, have they that
five,
many? Okay, so there I you go. So, I mean, you're talking about two sides of it, maybe a dozen All-Ireland clubs between them. And ironically, there is an interest in it in the sense that Bars are the favourites. They're looking to do a double, having won the hurling a fortnight ago, but have never beaten Nemo in a county final. And there's almost an unwritten rule in Cork that when Nemo get to a county final, they win it. I think I saw a stat there in the last day or two in our own paper that of the last 14 county finals, Paul, that Nemo have played, I think they've only lost three. So they tend to get the job done when they get to a final. So it is, to use a crude term, it is a sexy final in national terms, no more than Blackrock and the Bars was in the hurling. But I suppose if you were to talk about kind of the perfect Cork football final, you'd probably had the Bars against Castlehaven. I know that will stick in Tony's craw there. But I mean,
I know, but you're 100% right, Tony. In Cork at the moment, Paul, the three teams that are miles ahead of everybody else would be St. Finn Bars, who we refer to as the Bars here. It's never really called St. Finn Bars. Nemo and Castlehaven. Everybody else after that is not really as good as those three teams. Consistently over the years, and over the last 10 years, the Bars and Nemo have contested 7 of the 10 finals between them in so far as things. So outside of that, you have only 7 teams in all, actually, that have contested the last 10 finals. You have the likes of Duhallow, who are a divisional side, and division like huge tradition in Duhallow, huge tradition. And we might talk a little bit about Knock the Green in a second. That's John Fenton Daly's crowd, who are in the intermediate final, or the Premier Senior A. You have Ross Carberry, who had two of them. Clonakilty were in one. And UCC, Tony, were the other one, actually, going back the start of the thing in 11, you know? Yeah. And that was UCK. That was the Kerry UCC team. So they're traditionally, they dominate Cork football. The Bars actually are only coming again now, Paul.
So you go back to the '80s and the Bars were contesting. So you meet Donny O'Grady or any of these lads, and they're all hurling people, but they all have several All-Ireland club titles. They lost their way over about maybe the last 20 years in a way. Could I say they lost their tradition? No, I wouldn't say that. But they had some lean times and they've refounded it. They've worked very hard in the Bars. Underage structures were spot on. And around the time of the crash, that time, I remember the Bars more or less restructuring their whole board and everything to make sure that everything was right. Similarly, on the field, they had a good look at themselves. And my kids grew up with the likes of Ian Maguire. They would have played with Ian Maguire and all those lads, Sam Ryan and all those, Alan O'Donovan, Conor Horgan, all those lads that are playing in the final tomorrow or Sunday. And the Bars won all those championships underage coming up in football. And that has given them huge confidence. So what the Bars now have is a really good squad of winners from underage, and they have another wave of young lads coming along now that would have won in the hurling finals. So they have another group coming along that are absolute winners. And the problem
that's fine, Tony, but I'll put it to you that if these guys have a choice in the coming years between football and hurling, they're going to go to the Cork hurling team.
Listen, Paul, that's not a choice. And for me saying that, that's interesting, all right? Because if you look at the likes of the Bars team, and I just pick up the program here now, and I know a lot of these kids because, you have, I'll start with Brian Hayes. So Brian's about 6'4", genetically gifted. He floats over the ground. Really good. Should be central to Cork football for the next 10 years. Will he play football? I think he might try and play football, actually, because Paddy, his dad, played with Cork. Of course, he's a nephew of the Cunninghams. His mother, Val, is Jura's sister. So there's, you can see the draw. I'd say he'll try and play both. And you go along, then you have, there's a young guy who came on there, wing back. What's his name?
Ben O'Connor,
yeah.
What a player.
What a player, right? So Ben is one of these man-childs, I call him, right? So every now and again, somebody comes along like Michael Murphy for Donegal, or Stephen O'Brien in my day, I would refer to him as a man-child. He was at 19, he was a bloody monster, all right? So Ben O'Connor is coming along now, and he epitomizes how in Cork, there's a choice of what you'd like to play. So Ben is a terrific rugby player. He actually dominated some of the senior hurling championship games from wing back. He's a freak of a guy. He's a big, strong lad, a great attitude to sport. But he's also on the Munster Academy. Or he's too young to be in the Munster Academy, but he's going to be the next guy into the Munster Academy. I saw him play full back for Prez against Christians in the Senior Cup. He was absolutely outstanding, dominated that game. And I can see him go along and play rugby. All right. And while we're onto it, all right, you go to West Cork at the moment. And what are your choices for the top athletes? Right. So where before everyone played Gaelic football, you look at Skibbereen now. You have Liam and Gavin Coombs, all right, from Skibbereen. You have the Witcherleys from Bantry. Well, they're from Old Kailkill, just a small bit outside. You have John Hodnett from Roscarbery. Mm-hmm. You have Jack Crowley from Inishannon. You have a couple. You have a young guy from Clann. And you have another wave after them coming along as well. So your choices are just not hurling and football anymore.
The Ben O'Connor debate actually is very, very interesting, because there is, even though none of the participating organizations would admit as much, there's already a serious tug of war going on for Ben O'Connor services. Yeah, Tony made the point there, Paul, that Ben O'Connor isn't eligible yet at one level, but apparently he's been actually called into the Irish Rugby International Under 19 squad.
Okay.
Which is very much putting their arms around him. I would imagine if I'm Pat Ryan, the Cork senior hurling manager, or if I'm Kevin O'Donovan, the Cork GA CEO, there already has been conversations had about a pathway for Ben O'Connor if he were to choose hurling first. So there's a huge tug of war. And so football in that realm is a very, very distant third, unfortunately. I mean, this is, there's a Ben O'Connor thing here going on, Paul, that is not unlike David Clifford when the mention was made of, would he go to Australia? I know that the Kerry GA spoke to his family, spoke to him, put together a kind of a pathway in terms of college, in terms of a future, that said, we need you to stay here. And unless the Cork GA are very much outside their minds, they're doing the same thing with Ben O'Connor. He's that level of, I mean, he's, I don't even know, Tony, is he 19? I think he's probably still 18. He's doing his leaving.
I think he's 18. I don't. Yeah, that's correct. He's just gone into sixth year. I think he's 18. Yeah,
so, I mean, it's 19. Insane what the guy is doing in a senior hurling final, the last day against Blackrock. I mean, Tony uses the phrase man-child. He just basically, you would have just presumed if you were sitting up in the stand and you knew no better that this was a guy who was 27 or 28 and was after 6 or 7 years of S&C.
There is a dilemma there in around strength and conditioning, right? So if he's going to play with Munster, he's going to have to bulk up more and more to protect himself, to make sure that he survives that environment, right? That's going to come against him in relation to playing Gaelic football or stuff like that, because you're carrying a lot of muscle. It does slow you down a small, but you're not as agile as what you are if you don't have that kind of muscle. I know strength and conditioning has gone to 11. Now it's frightening, but look, he's a special talent. And of course you have Paddy Campbell as well, that played last week for Munster as well. Paddy played full forward for the Cork Miners a couple of years ago. He's a Nemo player, you know. I have no doubt he'd be playing as well.
And aren't there quite a number of Cork sports people who are now playing soccer in England who would have been previously good?
Like, no, Michael's actually are the best soccer academy in
Michael's GA club in Cork.
Michael's GA club, because if you look at some of the players that they provided, so you have David Moyler, you have Finbar Delaney, you have the Kelleher's, Cuivín and Fiacra. You'd have, of course, Zeebo has gone to rugby. Also, you'd have Owen O'Connell, Bonesy, he plays with Charlton. And that's just straight off, you know, thinking more, you know?
Yeah. So you can see, Paul, Ben O'Connor, by the way, will be playing in the football final, just to reiterate that. He's a super footballer as well. But yeah, I would say if you were to ask him, you'll probably find that football comes a distant third to hurling and rugby.
Yeah, and do you know what? All this is fine, but Cork have more GAA clubs than any other county in the country. Mm-hmm. Cork, doing its job properly, should be able to hold that level of sport and engagement. There's loads of people in Dublin who play, gone to rugby, gone to soccer, gave up GAA.
Yeah.
And
Kerry gone to Australia.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah.
So I have a question, actually, to Tony Lean. Cork clubs seem to do much better in the All-Ireland Club Championship. What's that about?
Than who?
Kerry.
I think there are probably a couple of clubs in Cork where football is still taken at the level that it should be taken. Kerry, realistically, at this moment, Paul, and really the question that you're asking is at a moment in time, to some degree, because there's no standout club team in Kerry at the moment. In fact, there probably hasn't been since Dr. Crokes, which I think is the last side from Kerry to win an All-Ireland, I think, in one of the groups last year.
Yeah, 2016. So, if you remember, they beat Sloughlin in the final, Tony.
I would think there are a couple of outstanding, Nemo and the Bars are really the clubs you're talking about, but the point that you made, Paul, is absolutely on the money. It's something that I have been preaching from the rooftops, and so does the other man on this podcast, for a lot of time in Cork. Now, it's a lot more palatable coming from him because he's from Cork and he's an All-Ireland medal, and I'm a blow-in and they don't really want to listen. And they're kind of saying, shut up, Lean, you don't know. But the bottom line is, if Cork wants to be the power that it should be in football, then it needs to change its mindset, its culture, its attitude to the game. I mean, that is the bottom line. And I mean, I am right bang in the middle of it in Douglas GA Club. I coach in the club at football. I see it firsthand. I know what it's like. People will say to you about dual clubs. There are very few dual clubs in Cork that take football as seriously as they take hurling. I think that's probably the most polite way I could say it, Tony.
100%. 100%. Look, it's tolerated in a lot of clubs. And that's probably, and that's even being nice, if I was being honest, in a way, you know. But the standard of the teams, you're right, Tony, you have it on. Your standard at the time, what team do they have now? All right. But on the, like, I suppose at the start of the year when we were playing, you judge yourself nationally. So could you win an All-Ireland? All right. And that's how you judge yourself. So can a Cork team or a Kerry team, as you were talking about, win an All-Ireland? And the evidence over the last 20 years is no. All right. So for over the last 20 years, so in 2016, Crokes won an All-Ireland in Slockley. And you have to go back to 2002 where Nemo beat Cross Malina, was the last one before. And that's 20 years of club championship. Now, you had the super teams. You had the Crosses and you had the... Kilmacud, the Dublin Super Clubs, as I call them. You have the Kilmacuds. You had the Ballybodens. Of course, Corrifin were a super side, absolutely brilliant footballers. But we're not at the national standard, really. And even on a Munster standard, if you look through it, like the Bars, Nemo, Crokes, Clanmel won the last few. So it's even in the Munster Championship, the Cork and Kerry clubs aren't winning in the ball either.
But so let me tell you, here's the conundrum. And this is this, Paul, is the thing that, you know, this is the debate, really. You are now talking, by the way, at senior level. I would argue that at 18 years of age, there are players in Cork that are every bit as good as anywhere in the country. Yeah, but the development doesn't. I'm involved with a minor team in Cork this year.
And a very good minor team, actually.
I'd happily put them out against any set of 18-year-olds in the country.
Yeah.
But whatever happens, you know, in terms of the preparation, as I said, putting in the necessary work, the necessary coaching, whatever happens, and as Tony rightly articulated there, all the other conversations, be they about hurling, rugby, all the other sports, whatever happens from 18 to 22, the fall off both in numbers and the fall off in standard of football in individuals in Cork is so marked that by the time they get to that age, they're no longer in the conversation at All-Ireland level.
Can I ask you a question, Tony Davis? We're going to talk about the Kerry final for a second. Have you ever, you never miss a Cork final. Have you ever gone to a Kerry senior football final?
No. I was tempted at one stage. No, I wouldn't have
much interest. Why is that, Tony?
I suppose I wouldn't have that much interest in it. I would have gone to see Maurice Fitzgerald play, all right? Just because I wanted to see Maurice Fitzgerald play, because he was just magnificent. And as an individual and as somebody, even for artistic impression, you'd give him 10 out of 10. He even looked good on a bad winter's day down in Tralee, you know. he was just magnificent, right? Would I go? No. I'd like to see David Clifford play. You know, again, one of these freaks. And one of my favourite Kerry players is Sean Shea at the moment. I think Sean Shea is just, oh my God. Would I spoke to the lads involved in UCC. When Shawnee played with UCC, and they just, even when he came first, they were saying, Jesus, come up and watch this guy, you know. He just was, oh my God. I used to go up to the Mardike to watch them play, and he's a special, special player. He's a bit unlucky that David Clifford actually is the David Clifford, and he's not a player of his generation. He's a player of more than that. He's a really top player.
Yeah,
Shawnee Shea. But I wouldn't go down I wouldn't go down to a Kerry final other than if it was a fine sun. Like, I was tempted a few times, Paul, but I looked out the window and it was lashing rain and I said, beck it, I wouldn't be back. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about that, Tony Lean? Is that a bit of a judgment?
Sure. I'm actually rooted to the chair here. I thought he was going to say he's been at about 15 Kerry finals, but we sure there. I suppose therein lies the problem, Paul, in terms of, you know, they wouldn't. Like, obviously, unfortunately, this Sunday, they're both clashing anyway. So even if Tony wanted to go to it, he's, you know, it's going to be in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. But a lot of people nationally will see the Kerry final because it's live on TG Car on Sunday.
And I want to ask you about this, Tony, and I absolutely don't want to insult anybody involved in this game. But club finals are obviously rooted around ideas of identity. And where you're from and representing where you're from. Is East Kerry an identity? Is Mid Kerry an identity?
The divisions in Kerry are absolutely an identity. Some more than others, I will say. So I would be a big backer of the divisions for the good reason. And you know what's coming, Paul, next, because you and I have had this argument many times, that basically the system allows the guy from the smallest junior B club to play with his division and play senior county championship football. So in that sense, I would back it. Having said that, there's a very, very real debate going on at the moment about the mix, the 16-team mix between the 8 clubs and the 8 divisions. There are 8 divisions at the moment, some of which you'd have to raise a question mark over in terms of, you use the word identity. You also had a situation, and I don't feel any great sympathy, don't get me wrong. People kind of think we're getting out the violin for poor Austin Stacks. They're in the road from me and Kerry. They're a rival club. But they were relegated from senior last Sunday, having won the county championship a year ago. They haven't fallen that far from grace, by the way. No, the cutthroat nature of the club championship, where there's only 8 teams and there's one relegated, is very stark in Kerry. So,
to be brutal about it, Tony, they didn't win enough matches.
No. The other part about it is Cairns O'Reilly's lost all their county championship matches, but they're in a club final now and they're representing Kerry and Munster. So, yeah, you know, there's a double standard.
Brutal, Tony. And I suppose where that comes into then, so they're now intermediate. So they're going to go out and win the intermediate championship and represent Kerry in the intermediate All-Ireland and walk it.
Yeah.
So while you have your top 8, which is Champions League stuff, it's just brutal, all right? And then you have the level below it. And yet, Kerry junior teams, whatever team represents Kerry in the junior club championship, in real terms, is a senior team in most other.
But put it this way, but my own club, just to give you a kind of an explanation, because you can't get promoted through the grades without winning a championship. So Ballymacelligot are actually a Division 1 team, senior, playing Dingle, Crokes, Cairns O'Reilly's, Stacks, all these people. And we are actually Premier Junior in Championship.
Right.
So we're in the third tier in Championship. And by the way, so is David Clifford's club. They're in the other semi-final on this. Sorry, Paul, I wanted to go back and just answer your question about East Kerry. The problem, if you use that word with East Kerry, is that they are at, you know, we talked about cyclical things there a few minutes ago. They're at a stage now where a rake of their constituent clubs are at the intermediate grade and are very good intermediate teams. So while Spa went senior last year and they lost them, Legion were relegated to intermediate and they got them back. So suddenly they got James O'Donoghue, Jonathan Lyon, Kian Gamble, all these Kerry players coming in. And there is a kind of a bit of a thing going on in Kerry that they're a bit of a super team, because obviously you throw in Fussa and then that brings in Paddy and David Clifford. But they've still got to win games. And I was berated a couple of weeks ago at Austin Stack Park by the East Kerry senior manager, rightly so. There was a stupid, stupid headline in the Examiner, which I, you know, it was kind of like, well, sorry, boss, I was off that night. Saw it the following morning, which was basically, we did an opinion piece. Somebody, one of the lads, John O'Dowd, did an opinion piece. And he asked in the piece, you know, so does Gerry O'Sullivan, the East Kerry manager, have the easiest job in football or not? Of course, the headline that went up in it was basically, Gerry O'Sullivan has the easiest job in football, which was nonsense. It was a stupid, stupid headline. And of course, he's taken every opportunity he has, because I've actually covered the last two Kerry games and I had to interview him afterwards. And he's berated me on both occasions for saying what a stupid headline it was and how it made his life so difficult. And he's right. There's no such thing like as that. You still got to go out and win your games. And I would say, actually, East Kerry were lucky to actually beat Dingle. It was actually, they were very lucky to beat Dingle in the semi-final. Dingle played extremely well. East Kerry had a guy sent off with 15 minutes to go. I thought Dingle would do it. But in fairness to East Kerry, somehow they managed to eke out 1-9 to 1-8 on a dreadful day for football. And so they've earned their right to be in the final. But your question is extremely valid, Paul. I mean, Cairns O'Reilly's won the club championship last weekend. Does it mean more to them in their clubhouse afterwards than it would to East Kerry next Sunday? I would argue probably yes.
That does. It does. It, yeah, it does.
But only you've got to accept. Do you not see the other side, like the Beara division?
When I started playing football with Skibreen, we were junior one, all right? And so I played with Carberry division before before Skibreen went up senior, all right? Which was a long and rocky road as well. But yeah, it's nice to play against top players and it gives you an opportunity to play against top players. But the top players are on the county thing anyway, if you understand what I mean. So you're in with the county team and you're training 5, 6, 7 days a week anyway, you know? I think there is more identity with club teams, as Paul has suggested. And it's very hard. Like club divisional teams are very difficult to organize. I know here in Cork they are anyway, because there's so much competition in their own division as well. Just even to get together for training is difficult. But Tony, just go back to another point. Isn't that the ideal scenario for Jack O'Connor to have a Champions League style brutal championship where every day they have to go out and win the game? So you have your top players active, yes, even when they're not in with Kerry, at a really, really high cutthroat level. Yeah. And you can see who's going to be up to it or not. So Jack is pretty brutal, as we all know. Jack would do anything to win an All-Ireland, right? Yeah. And
Jack, I've never had a problem with Jack. Jack was a great guest on this
podcast. I'm not saying that's a negative, Paul. I'm not saying that's a negative. Like, we're talking here about winning All-Irelands. Nothing else matters, Paul.
It's a great playing.
Jack's record is phenomenal, really, isn't
phenomenal,
it?
Phenomenal. But
he's recovering from, would you believe, talk about, like, what an incredible, I mean, I was going to use the word stubborn, cranky. We use all those words when I'm slagging him, like, he's not alone, just gone and got one hip replaced the last couple of weeks. He got both hips replaced at the same time.
Yeah. Are you surprised?
And that club match is still.
And I was just about to say, and you can be guaranteed he was at the county semi-finals.
He
will be in Austin Stack Park on Sunday, because there's a lad, you know, there's always kind of one guy emerges from the county championship in Kerry. And there's a lad called Rory Murphy from Listroy. Yeah. Yeah. Who there's a lot of talk about. He's a serious player, playing wing forward, very rangy, could play midfield, could play centre forward. And I would not be surprised at all if when the first National League side, or certainly the first National League panel that Jack picks for 2023, you'll be looking at the name R. Murphy from Listroy. So Jack will be there, because if Rory Murphy is going to make it with Kerry next year, then Rory Murphy needs to make it with East Kerry against Mid Kerry next Sunday. And Jack will be there. I don't know, he's probably thrown off the crutches at this stage. Anyway, already they're gone, but he'll be there no matter how, he has to be there.
Listen, Tony, when people heard that Jack was coming back to the Kerry management last year, they were saying, bloody hell, here we go again. Because Jack is a winner. Jack is a winner. Like, I go back to the start of last year when the Sigerson Cup was on and Tralee played a game and you had Jack Savage and I think Young Brosnan was
it. Yeah, they played UCD down in Tralee. I was down with UCD.
Yeah, so like Paul, those lads went and played another game that day, all right? And like,
they did more than that, Tony. They drove a couple of 100 kilometres.
That's it, right?
Across Kerry and Tipperary.
Somebody asked me about that at the time. I remember at the time coming up, and I said, Jesus, sure, what do you expect? Jack is the manager, right? Jack will leave it up to them, and he'll say, that's their choice. If they want to play with Kerry, show a bit of desire and do it. And look, Jack is ruthless. All Jack wants to do is win, and win the All-Ireland, and that's it. Munster Championships in football are, I won't say they're worthless now, but they don't carry the same weight as what it is. It's all about winning an All-Ireland. You know, and Jack is the perfect foil for that. He's a magnificent manager and he's a winner.
And he's also, by the way, got a son playing with Mick Kerry on Sunday. Don't forget that.
Has he?
Actually,
when
Jack was in
Kildare, Aina's a very fine footballer.
Played with Moorfield.
I saw him play.
They've now transferred back. And Aina is one of the primary score getters for Mick Kerry. He's a good footballer now in his own right. Very good footballer.
So I saw the name Aina O'Connor, Tony, and I was thinking, was it the Aina below from the Gaeltacht?
No, it's Jack's son. That's Jack's son.
That's good, yeah.
So he has more than a football interest in Sunday, Paul.
Yeah, I saw him play minor with Kerry. He's a free taker.
That's right.
Isn't he?
I want to ask something
about the other county finals that are on this weekend. So there's county finals in Clare and Fermanagh. And Galway and Mayo as well, amongst others. So let's look at the Mayo final. Ballina Stephenites are playing Westport. Westport, loads of hurling, no football. Ballina Stephenites have 36 county titles. Won their first one in 1889. And granted, they've had 15 years without a title. Last one in 2007. So that's Ballina Stephenites against. So a team, the most successful against a team without that winning tradition. In Clare, Aero Guinness are two behind Kilrush, who haven't won a championship for a long time. Errol Guinness on 19, Kilrush, and they're going for the championship. And they're playing Beleek. And Beleek haven't been in a final for 40 years, have only won two championships, one with one team, 79 and 81. So they're coming up against it. Ennis Diamond are playing against...
Ennis Diamond
are playing against Errol Guinness.
Errol Guinness.
In Fermanagh, you have Enniskillen Gaels out against Beleek, who have only two, 79 and 81. Ennis Diamond have no medal. Sorry, I should have said that in Clare. So you've got teams trying to make the breakthrough against teams that are enduringly, repeatedly successful. What are you saying to those teams trying to make the breakthrough?
And by the way, just before you even go in, you had the similar situation with Cross McGlynn, who won and are the established. I mean, it's a very interesting consideration, Paul, because...
Like, does it matter? Does it matter?
Of course it matters. I mean,
why does it matter?
Because there's an old phrase about hanging the jersey on the gate. And it's basically what that essentially means is that, you know, tradition is worth 4 or 5 points to you. And people say, that's not true. But people who say that's not true, they're not the ones in the opposition dressing room, the new kids on the block that are trying to knock the established kings off their perch. So, like, there is always that consideration. You often hear people talk about the first 10 minutes of a game is a game within itself. Well, I would actually say that element of a game is actually part of the game within itself as well. So if you are not bringing it back again to our previous discussion, but if you are facing a Nemo or you are facing a Bars or you are facing a Corrafin or this weekend you are facing a Ballina, or if you're in Clare and you're Ennis Diamond and you're West Clare and you're facing the big boys from Ennis, there is always, you can scream and roar and bang doors in dressing rooms, Paul, about we're this and we're as good as these guys. And we're like, talk is cheap. You've actually got to go out. And the one thing I've learned over the years, and I mean, Tony would know this a million times better than me, but it's only when you start getting, past your playing years and you look back and you actually say, I used to hear people talking about experience. And I used to just kind of pass it off as one of those glib catch-alls. They've had the experience of being there before. That actually is such a massive consideration on big game days, that you're used to actually playing in these games. So what I would say, Paul, is whether you're Ennis Diamond, you know, Westport. I'm trying to think of the Fermanagh Bleak. Whether you're any of the underdog teams, I certainly think that on the day, you need to be at least 10% better.
So I'm going to disagree with you, Tony, and I'm going to take the West, I'm going to take the Mayo final as an example.
Yeah,
I think it is irrelevant to the Mayo final that Ballinagh Stephenites won the Mayo Senior Football Championship in 1889 or 1927 or 1947. I'd be thinking they haven't won since 2007. I'm in the Westport dressing room. I will be saying
you're Lee Keegan. You're Lee Keegan inside the dressing room.
You're Lee Keegan. You're saying. The pressure on these
five-time All-Star player of the year 2016. Yeah,
you just don't care. You don't care.
But that's not the same, Paul. That's not the same situation. You're not facing a Nemo Rangers in that situation. Yeah. You know, you're not you're not facing a team that are perennially there and are perennially doing it. And so that is much more a 50-50 situation. I'm not talking about a team that won five counties, like John Mitchell's in Kerry. Won five counties or four counties in a row back in the 60s. No one would mind playing us or John Mitchell's in a county final now because of what they did in the 60s. I'm talking about a Cross McGlenn. I'm talking about a Nemo.
No, hold on. Ballinagh Stephenites have 36 county championships. They're the most successful club in Mayo. They win every decade.
Yeah, but when is the most recent one of those?
2007. So they've slipped for...
That's the end of the conversation. That's the end of the conversation. Okay.
So that's
15 years ago.
So basically their tradition, so on Sunday, Ballinagh Stephenites tradition doesn't matter.
In that context, it doesn't matter. But they haven't won one since 2007. No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I bring up another point? And I think there's a bigger picture here. And similarly with the county having an identity and culture to me is huge. All right. And if you have proper culture within a club, you will be consistent. You might have times where you don't win everything, but you're going to be consistent. I make this point quite a lot. If you have shared goals and values in a club and it goes right through the club, your honesty, your accountability, your resilience, and you have the whole management of the club understanding this, everybody that goes to the club or your county, like Kerry, football county completely, that the manager has it, and your captain has it, and it flows through all the different teams that are associated with that culture, then you're going to be consistent and you're going to be always there or thereabouts. I think culture doesn't guarantee you success, but it guarantees you being consistent all along and competitive. And I think that's a huge point to all these teams we're talking about, the Bars, Nemo, Kerry and the football. Kerry know who they are. They know their identity. When you watch a Kerry team playing, you know you're going to get kick passing. You know you're going to get corner forwards that will slip a goal, right? You know you're going to have all that. And that culture is so, so important for any team that wants to be successful. And therein lies the problem for any dual club, I think. Your identity. What is your identity? Where do you fit into that identity? It's very difficult.
Can I ask you one, Paul?
Sure.
And talking about Mayo, I don't know, did we chat about it earlier? The final management piece of the jigsaw actually in the country was nominated last night in Roscommon. They named their new manager. In terms of the Mayo setup, Kevin McStay, Stephen Rochford, Liam McHale, Donny Buckley. How do you think that's going to work? I mean, how is that going to play out in real terms? Is there, because I think there's a lot of intrigue looking at that management team and seeing how many Chiefs there are, how many Indians, and how is it going to be divvied up, and how is it going to work? Do you think it can work?
Well, first of all, I'll be straight out and say that it's not the management team I would have chosen. I am obviously to some extent blinded by a friendship with Oisín. And I would have picked Ray Dempsey and Oisín McConville. In the context of the team that's in there, I think it was exceptionally difficult for Mayo County Board not to give the job to that group of people who went for it. Is there time now I would really question the variety of roles and the need for that many people of that stature and age group. And I accepted that Stephen Rochford's a little bit younger, but that's that age group. And I would like to know, before I would say whether it's going to be successful or not, who is involved in the setup, who is either still playing at club level or who has recently played at inter-county level, because I think that really matters.
Mm.
I think there's a generational thing. There's a brilliant, I read a couple of books recently about Johan Cruyff. Read his autobiography, read a book by a Dutch journalist called André Koch, and read a brilliant book by Simon Cooper, who's a journalist with the Financial Times.
Yeah.
He wrote a brilliant book called Barca, which is the history of Barcelona. And he has this line about Johan Cruyff being a brilliant player and then a brilliant manager with Barcelona. And then once he hit 50, his management career was essentially done. He wasn't able to reinvent himself. And he has this section in the book, Simon Cooper has, where about people who have, once they turn 50, they lose the inability to think hard and to really...
They lose the ability or the inability?
Lose the ability to think hard.
Right.
And that what they do is they begin to imagine that things that they're seeing now they've seen before, or they don't deal with the actual evidence of what is happening. And I think there's a real danger in a management team if you don't have a mix of generations of that happening. Now, Kevin McStay is a very smart man.
Paul, you're so right.
Is a very hard, yeah. smart man. And I'm you're sure right. that they will find a way. I'm sure they will find a way to do that. But I would worry about the generational mix of that management team.
But, Paul, you go back to Kevin. I know Kevin quite well, actually. Kevin is a bit like Jim Gavin, and his background's in the army, all right? And you will find that there will be a structure there, absolutely guaranteed. He is very methodical. Kevin is very structured himself. If you saw Kevin preparing for a game around research and stuff like that, it's hugely methodical. His background is an engineer, kind of maths and science. That's his background. He has really good people with him, and I can see him as a group being successful. I take your point about the generational thing, but in the end of the day, it's on the field they're going to win it. And anytime Mayo have got to the top, playing finals and stuff like that, they just weren't good enough.
No, I didn't have the forwards.
They didn't have the forwards. Just didn't have it. And Tony's point about the managerial team. Yeah, I think they're really talented people. There is a lot of bulls in there insofar as alpha males. But I would say Kevin would be able to organize that in a productive way. Whether they're good enough or not, I don't know. The O'Connors, I hope, will be back fit this year. And they're crucial to it. They're crucial. And if they're fit, well, they're going to be there or thereabouts.
See, Mayo Club Football, I've gone down to Mayo Club Football quite a bit. I love Mayo Club Football. It's brilliant football to watch. Yeah. It's open and it's fast. There are loads of really, really good footballers in Mayo. And Killian O'Connor was an excellent inside forward. Andy Moore had a lot. But what they did not have were two more really extremely brilliant forwards to come off the bench to win the All-Ireland against the greatest team of all time. So they were an amazing team, one of the greatest teams ever to play Gaelic football, even though they didn't win an All-Ireland. And I know that annoys people when that's said.
No, but you're right.
They went toe-to-toe with a brilliant team. I don't think any less of Lee Keegan because he doesn't have an All-Ireland medal. I don't think any less of Colin Boyle because he doesn't have an All-Ireland medal. And the truth of it is they were overwhelmed by a panel of players. And it's really interesting. Dublin training last year complained to Dublin training, say, 5 years ago. 5 years ago, Dublin could play A versus B matches in training, and it was outstanding quality. Last year, Dublin didn't play very many A versus B matches. They had to mix the panels when they were playing. And that's a really interesting distinction. And Dublin cannot empty the bench. Dublin could not beat Kerry this year because they did not have... Well, they weakened their team to start, so they did have a bench to come in. But they did not have 15 good starters with eight to come in. And Mayo have got that problem. They don't have the inside forwards, and I don't think they've got the bench.
Yeah, well, you look at Dublin, they have Paul Mannion, I think, is coming back. Is he and Jack McCaffrey?
Paul and Jack coming back. Tony, can I ask you, do you think that Mayo management will be a success?
I think it will, and I think that Kevin will be able to organise that. They have quality people. They have quality leaders on the field as well. And it's about getting them fit, their top 15 fit to championship. And if they can get them fit to championship, they'll be hugely competitive with the squad they have.
Yeah, what about you, Tony Lee?
I'm going to ask something completely original and say, where are the forwards? Why do we keep talking about new management, new this, new that? I had this conversation with Colin Sheridan only last week.
You asked me. That's why we're talking
about it. No. I'm talking about the question about the forwards. Saying I had this conversation with Colin Sheridan last week here, Donny was down for the day, and we were chatting about this whole episode. We're talking about Mayo and we're talking about mentality. And I was saying that why do we keep dancing around the fundamental issue here? You know, you're talking about we were missing a couple of forwards this year. We were talking about if Killian did that. The bottom line is the forwards are not there. I asked Colin Sheridan, are the forwards coming through? Like, for instance, I'll give you a for instance, because it was the one county final, I'd say, Paul, we didn't mention so far. And this is a very much a 50-50 final. The Tyrone final is also on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You've Errigal Kieran playing.
Errigal Kieran, yeah.
One of Darragh. The best footballers I saw this year. I was above in Port Leash today, Kerry and Tyrone played in the All-Ireland Under-20 semi-final. And Darragh Canavan, what a prospect this. Rory Canavan, my apologies.
Dara is a brilliant footballer.
Too. Oh, no, but I'm saying I'm talking about the day in Port Leash. Rory was an outstanding, like, basically beat Kerry. Like, I mean, was the primary reason that Declan O'Sullivan's Kerry didn't get to an All-Ireland final. So, like, and he's been shooting the lights out. They beat Tramore by a point in the semi-final. Three Canavans, actually, Tommy, Dara and Rory, were all very, very prominent. My point is, there are forwards that you can almost absolutely hang your hat on for couple of years' time, and you're saying they're coming through. They're going to be in Kerry. There's, by the way, even going right the way back to where we started, there are serious forwards in Cork. There are serious forwards available in Cork. There's a guy, Tony, I know you're laughing at me, young Corbett from Clyde Rovers.
Yeah, hopefully he'll come through his injury, and he's coming through nicely. Oh, man, he's a good player.
My point is that if you're going to hang your hat on anything for All-Ireland success in the future, you have to have scoring forwards.
Listen, Pep Guardiola went off and bought Haaland, right? And like, he needs since Aguero, they didn't have a killer instinct up front, and you need that. Look, you're dead right, Tony. Like, even at that level of Champions League, to win, you need that. Somebody in front of goal that's guaranteed. You're not that Haaland, he'll get 1-6, he'd probably get 6 goals, or imagine marking him, but you do a 100%.
So that's
I think that's Tyrone are going to be a team to watch in the coming year. I think I agree, some of those younger players that those 20s team will be true. Some of the other teams will be the players will be back, and they will be tipping. We didn't also talk about the Galway final, which is, again, a really attractive game. Mike Cullen against Salt Hill.
Yeah.
McCarra, and the
John O'Mahony. Yeah.
And there's it's really interesting what's happening. And we are going to talk about this in another show in a bigger light. The way teams are being organized in the country now, and the growth of clubs kind of in the suburbs of towns and cities, or in the Donegal area around them. And the manner in which rural clubs are struggling, like Corrifin, have clearly taken a step back. And this story is repeated all across the country. And I'll give you an example. We talked about the Mayo final. Ballycastle, a small village in Mayo, won 3 county championships in the 30s. The idea that Ballycastle, which is a brilliant GAA club, I know people from there, brilliant GAA club, but the idea that they can come and win again a Mayo senior football championship is gone. Yeah. And the fundamental structure of the GAA is creaking based on demographic shifts from country areas into towns and then on into cities around emigration and what happens. So we're going to talk about that in another show. We're also going to talk about the broadcasting deal in another show. We're going to talk about the next year's Clan Championship and the calendar of play that's coming. But to finish up, the Galway Championship, the Galway Senior Football Championship, again, a really serious prospect of a match and a game worth travelling to, Mike Cullen against Salt Hill Knocknacarra.
And just when you mentioned Mike Cullen there, and I meant to mention it when we were talking about the All-Stars, Sean Kelly, is he worth the shout? I mean, I'm just trying to think, like, Jason Foley had a good year with Kerry. Maybe there was an argument. Was there an argument last
I don't week? Think Galway could get six All-Stars.
No.
I don't. Did they get five? They did? Did they
get five? And,
okay. Yeah. I'm not certain we should be basing it on a numbers game either.
No, we shouldn't. But we also, I wonder, is this the first time that every All-Star came from a provincial champion? Only provincial champions got All-Stars.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't see that, Paul.
I didn't actually, I think, to be honest with you, the Galway conversation is hugely interesting. And exactly for the reason that I mentioned Tyrone and you added there, Paul, as well, in terms of when you're looking at 2023, there's a very interesting situation now with Galway next year in terms of, like, driving on. Is it a once up surge? Have they stuff coming through to actually, you know, maintain that push next year with Pádraig Joyce? Obviously he's locked in for another year. Keane O'Neill is locked in, John Dibley. So you still have a very good, strong backroom team there. I'd be very interested to see what Galway do next year. I mean, does this mean now that we're going to be talking about Galway in Final Four for the next 2, 3, 4 years?
I think they have two huge problems. The first is Kieran Molloy, who is understatedly brilliant for Galway last year, did his cruciate. And I think that's a huge problem for them, number one. Number two, Liam Silk is gone to New Zealand, or going to New Zealand to work as a doctor at least until April. And I would say that's a real lift, a real struggle for him to come back and play. Liam Silk's brilliant and fundamental to that team. And I think that you take the two of those out of that defence, that could really, really cause problems. Paul Conroy will be a year further on. And the question is, all of those subs who were togged out for Galway on All-Ireland Sunday, and they must have had 20 lads togged out for the photo before the game who trotted back over afterwards, are there five or six of those who are going to push through and to such an extent that they must be played?
And we don't have the time, I'd imagine, to get into it today, but the draw for the Connacht Championship next year is extremely lopsided.
Common v Mayo in the first game, with the winners playing Galway in a semi-final, which means whoever comes through Roscommon Mayo is well-hardened and ready for road. Yeah. Playing Galway, I think, a week later.
Seriously. And I suppose the other side of the draw is you have all the other counties, including London and New York, on the lower thing. One of them is going to get to the final. So one of them is going to be in the All-Ireland Series.
Which is something that is going to be quite interesting to watch. Also, by the way, in Leinster, the draws, and we'll come back to this again, things, the draw in Leinster puts Louth, Westmeath, Offaly, Longford and Meath all on one side of the draw.
One side, yeah.
Up to there and Dublin on the other side.
Yeah.
That leaves a huge gate open for someone to pile through. I think on balance, you're looking at Munster. It looks again back to the old traditional Cork v Kerry final, though you wouldn't bet on it, depending on what Cork do. And then you look north to the, you said it earlier, Tony Davis, and you're absolutely right. The one serious championship is the Ulster Championship. It just looks magnificent next year. Again,
imagine the Talton Cup with one of those top teams from the north in it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, but what I will say is, Cavan were Ulster champions 2 years ago, and Cavan didn't win the Talton Cup this year. Now I know Cavan have taken a step back.
Yeah.
But
so
I think at that top end of Division 3 and the bottom end of Division 2, there's very little difference between the teams.
I don't want
to steal Paul's constitutional right to ask the key questions, but Tony Davis, who wins the Cork final on Sunday?
I think the Bars win the final. I think they have a lot to, they've improved an awful lot from previously. And all these kids that we spoke about earlier on, they're real players. They're top, top players. They'll play with Cork at something, either hurling or football. And they're going to be successful because they're top players.
And who'll win the Kerry final, Tony Lean?
I would say East. The day, apparently, they're going to get slightly luckier with the weather this time, which has been a massive leveler in some of East Kerry's other games. It's going to be basically decent dry day. Mid Kerry are a good side, but East Kerry just have too many bullets in their chamber. They really do. They've just too much quality. And they'll win. Yeah, I think East Kerry will win Kerry. But Cairns O'Rahillys will represent Kerry in Munster. That's the other thing.
Thank you to Larry Ryan for running this podcast, to Raf Rocca, to Tony Lean, to everyone at Examiner Smart. A huge thanks to Tony Davis
for
joining us today. Bimmy Tarnashkalu.
A grain of rice. A grain of rice. Tip the scale. Just remember that.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen between them. And now they're really roaring.
And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk. I'll declare for at least a week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.